Okay, so tell me a little bit about yourself.
Okay, my name is Deborah Allen. I was born in Shreveport, Louisiana, January 2nd, 1956. And I've left a couple of times, but mostly I've lived here.
So I'm really excited to talk to you because I've heard so much about your activism for the LGBTQ community, not just, you know, back in the day, probably, but even up till today. What made you feel motivated to help people?
Well, if we start at the very beginning of when I realized the world around me, I was about 15 years old, and it was a lot. There was a Vietnam War. Well, younger than that, but around 15, I realized that I was anti-war. So there were all these old hippie magazines at the time, and you'd see ads in the back of it. So and so is in prison for dodging the draft, and so I started writing these political prisoners at 15. Well, one of them came back. I guess the guy got released or something. Came back, and my parents found it, and so I got grounded for writing these prisoners, you know, that were there for political reasons, and that kind of stuck with me that there was so much injustice in the world, and so that's what kind of led up to my more outward activism. When the AIDS epidemic hit in Shreveport, it was different from big cities. I mean, a really good friend of ours in the art community was named John David Horning, and he was a big, robust guy. I'd take my kids over to his house on Sunday afternoons to go swim in his pool, and he would cook for all our friends. My kids are right there with everybody. Well, I saw him out one day, and I realized he had lost a lot of weight, at least 30, 40 pounds. He was thin. I'm like, oh my gosh, you look so great. What are you doing? He goes, I have AIDS. And not knowing what caused it at the time, it scared me. I just had heard about it. You know, there was no real, you know, documentation on what caused it. Well, I would never let my kids go back over there. And he eventually died because I was afraid of, you know, being contagious. We didn't know. And so after he died, that's when it came out that it wasn't airborne, or you couldn't get it by kissing or hugging or everything. And the guilt, I felt so bad for not being there for my friend. It was at that point I decided that I wasn't going to stop until we saw the cure. And that's what began it.
What were one of the first like acts of activism that the group took?
The very first one was there was another HIV AIDS organization starting up, but they weren't really doing anything. So we met as ACT UP Shreveport in my apartment for the first time, and then we went and we busted in that meeting they were having, and that was the real first that we confronted them on the things that they were and weren't doing, and that's really was the first activism. And as Gary talks about in the film, war had just started in the Gulf War, and there we were right on the front page with it the same day that it was announced, you know, the war in the front page, and we were just all shocked, you know. But that was the very first thing. And then we took on LSU Medical Center for not having, you know, a clinic and not being any resources for people with HIV or AIDS.
What was your life like at this point?
Let's see. I was a hairstylist. I worked at Ultimate Appearances. I had four kids. I had divorced and I had all my kids. We were living in a one bedroom apartment, all my kids. And I was working and as a hairstylist, and I designed clothes too. So I was sewing for drag queens and everything. That's how I made my living. It was sewing for drag queens, you know? And because men couldn't just go in and buy a gown back then, like you can now. I mean, you'd walk out of a dressing room and get beat up, but that's how I was making my living. And, Soon after the thing with John David, that's when we met and ACT UP started in my life. So,
were you a single mom?
Yeah, I had divorced my husband and had the kids with me. It was because of the activism with ACT UP that I realized what I wanted to do with my life besides being a hairstylist. And I worked my way through college. I went full-time 3 years, 3.0, four kids in a one-bedroom apartment. Don't know how I did it. No, I couldn't do it today, you know. But that's how I knew what I was going to do with my life. And that was it.
When you think back on that time, you know, you said, I couldn't do it now, but I still see you really active in the community, standing up for people. I mean, do you feel like that the kind of activism you do now is different from then?
No, it's not. I mean, you know, when you have an equal part of anger and love, that really is the formula for activism. So if you see some injustice in around you, you do something about it. It may be, you know, quietly, or it may be like me. It's like, lead me in the right direction. I'll be in the front line. You know, it's that whole fight or flight thing. I think in some ways people just don't turn their eyes to when they see injustice, they react in some way.
Do you remember what you felt like was a turning point for ACT UP? Like when you all felt like, oh, we are making progress. Like this is happening. Like we're doing something good.
Well, when there was that big, the NIA, there was a big protest there. And that was the first one because we were on CNN on loop because we were in front of the whole thing. So, yeah, that's when we said, wow, we're there. But we also, the national hotline came to Shreveport, Louisiana into our phone lines too. So we would take turns all over, you know, from New York to Shreveport, Louisiana, taking the phone calls. So that was another thing that showed us that we were, you know, we were really making progress, you know, even on a national level, not just, you know, locally.
Do you remember what some of those phone calls were like?
Just asking for resources. I live in, you know, North Carolina. Where can I go? You know, we had a little book that ACT UP New York put out, and we could look up that information for them. Or just you know, HIV prevention, you know, information. That was another one. Another about testing, you know, like if I get an HIV test, how much of it is it 80% accurate, 99% accurate? Those kind of questions. They were really, once you had an education on it, they were easy to answer. And a lot of us went to a class through the Red Cross, HIV 101, that really, really prepared you for that stuff. And we would go out into the community and do prevention seminars and stuff like that too.
So, you know, you equipped yourself with so much education. And, you know, I heard you when you were talking about John David, you know, you were like, you know, we didn't see him because we didn't know. I mean, how did all this training kind of change your perception of people who are HIV positive?
Once I realized that, you know, you could, you know, it wasn't just airborne or something, that was just a misconception and, you know, what they call fake news now, you know, that there was no difference. I mean, I held babies that were HIV infected who would throw them. I mean, I'd be like, oh, give me a rag, you know. And, you know, it was like I knew that I was going to be okay, you know.
Was it a point of contention at any time with, like, your family or your kids? Oh, yeah.
Well, yeah, I had family members saying, why are you bringing your kids around those people? Because they're going to get AIDS and you're going to get AIDS and it'll be your fault and you're going to hell. You know, I had really close family members that really took that hard line judgment thing, you know, and you just put up that wall and ignore it, you know, because you knew better.
It must have been hard to hear that from people that you loved.
Yeah, it was. Yeah.
You know, what was, this is such a personal question, but I'm going to ask it. What was your love life like during this time? Were you dating?
Well, my first girlfriend was when I was 17. She was 16 in high school. I found out I was pregnant. I had been dating my child's father before that, and then found out I was pregnant, and she left town, you know. And my parents and he pressured me and get married. So I married him, went on to have more kids with him. So I was so madly in love with her. You know, I was heartbroken that I was going to have to marry this guy, you know. But, I mean, I have four amazing children. from it, but it didn't end well at all. We divorced after 15 years, and then I just dated whoever, you know, I wanted to when I was single again. Women, men, you know, being pansexual, all that didn't matter to me. You know, anyone on the spectrum can be attracted to me, you know, so.
What did that make dating complicated? Like, I mean, did people understand that language that, like, you just kind of loved who you loved?
Oh, no, because straight people didn't want to date you because the only word for it then was bisexual, you know. So if you were labeled bisexual, straight people didn't want to date you because, you know, no telling what you would do. And then gay people didn't want to date you because you'd go back to being straight. So it really was isolate you. But now I feel like I fit in because there are new words for all sorts of things we didn't have back then, you know, so. Yeah. So,
yeah, that was something that struck me is it's like we have a vocabulary now that's really clear that we can talk to people like. I mean, how, like, did it ever come up that you had to, like, explain to someone, like, how you wanted to date or, like.
I don't remember having to explain it. You know, I don't even remember having to, like, oh, I'm bisexual or whatever the term was at the time, you know, just dated. Yeah. I was really lucky to be in a bubble of a real, you know, tight fit community in Shreveport. There's one thing, there's lots of bad things you can say about Shreveport, but the gay community in this town love each other. And that doesn't happen very often in other places either. But we really stick together and take care of each other here. And that's always been that way.
Do you think that's a result of where we are in the world?
Shreveport? I think, like I said, Shreveport's this little oasis. And you go 20 miles outside of Shreveport and you are in redneck heaven. You know, the whole Bible Belt thing going on. So, yeah, I think we're very unique here. It makes it not only durable to live here, but comfortable and safe.
Yeah. One thing from doing these interviews is that I've realized that, you know, the gay community really stood up for one another and supported mm-hmm. one another whenever people needed it most. Do you feel like that community is different today than it was, say, in the 80s and early 90s?
In the 80s, there was a section of gay people who did not like the activism of ACT UP. I mean, because we were, you know, putting a spotlight on the gay community and stuff. And it wasn't really a positive one. I mean, we were bringing, you know, AIDS is here. Oh, don't you do that here. You know, we don't want to be attached to that. Whereas today, it's totally different. I mean, there is stigma, but not in the community like that. You know, it's people outside the community that still are not as much, but still are that way. So, yeah, I think it's come a long way here locally, you know.
Yeah, I feel like we have so much far to go. It's sometimes easy to lose sight of how far we've come because I feel like we have a lot more that we can do here.
Right, right.
And you've seen it all. I mean, I feel like hearing your perspective is really great because for me, I look around and I go like, we have to work so hard to change this thing. But right. I hear about what you did and what your friends did and where you've come from. It's really inspiring.
Oh, thanks. I mean, people, after they see Small Town Rage, they come up to me and go, how did you do that? I was like, if you had been in that situation, you would have fought for your friends too, you know? So I really believe so many people don't see that in themselves, you know, that it's in you to take care of others. It really is.
Yeah. This is so out of order, but like, I'm thinking a lot about all the language that we have now today to describe our sexuality. When the first time that you heard the term pansexual, you were like, oh, that's me.
Yeah, totally. You know, first of all, I had seen the word, so I went and Googled it and I was like, oh my God, I have found my people.
What did it feel like to have a word to describe you?
I didn't feel this isolated anymore. And my whole life I had felt like I didn't fit in. And now I do. So at this late age in life, I finally fit in. You know?
How old were you when you discovered like pansexuality was a thing?
Oh, just a few years ago.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
So you must have just felt like finally, like this, like
right.
whole world open to you.
as do a lot of people in our community that didn't have a word, transgender people, they just had one word, transsexual, you know, and now there's just so many different ways to describe it. So I totally can relate to that. Yeah.
Yeah. It's awesome. What other big changes have you seen in your lifetime that you feel like are optimistic or maybe that show us we have more work to do?
Well, the optimistic part, I and those around me who fought the fight with HIV and AIDS, we fought so much. And so when the gay marriage happened in the Supreme Court, I said, finally, now I can do something that can be fun. And so I went and became a clergy, and I've performed so many, you know, same-sex marriages, and that's so huge. I mean, to be able to marry now, you know, and that was wouldn't have been thought of. That no one could even conceive of marrying, you know, in the 80s, 70s or 80s.
Amazing. Yeah. What was conducting your first ceremony like?
I was so nervous, but it was really laid back. It was two women at Ford Park, and they just had friends around them, you know, and it was great. You know, it was great. There have been a couple of times I've got tongue tied. Like for one wedding, I said "in thickness and health" instead of "sickness and health," and everybody's looking at her. But after that never happened again, you know. So
I love, yeah. But you know, maybe that's a vow we need to adopt because, yeah. Like, you know, I've gotten thicker the older I've gotten. Maybe I'll add that to when Chris and I renew our vows. I'll say in thickness. I'm curious if Debbie today could meet Debbie then.
Right.
What would you want to tell her?
Sweetheart, just be yourself like you. I was very rebellious at 15, you know. Keep doing that. That was the one thing that got you through the trauma, you know, being, you know, in the family life I was in and all that. That will get you through life. Don't you keep that. You be yourself. You stand up, you know, and do what you know is right. So if it on the negative, I would say, don't worry about so much stuff. Yeah, God, you know, it's going to be okay. It really is.
Were there things that you worried about a lot?
Yeah. I mean, you know, body image, all those things teenagers have, you know, that stays with you your whole life, you know, but those things aren't important. You know, when you come into yourself, you know, in that self-realization, then you know those things aren't important.
Yeah, that's really cool. I wish I had heard that at 15. Yeah. What else should we talk about? What else?
We can talk about my children.
Yeah, I love that. Yeah.
We talk about what it was like from my perspective, what it was like for them to have been raised by a mother who put her 4-year-old in the back of a red truck and carried a protest sign in one hand and pulled her in the other. I mean, she's probably better equipped to do that. Micah, I think Micah went through the most trauma. It's me as a parent, you know, because he could understand what was happening when people died around him, you know, and he became very close to them. And I've often wondered, should I have, you know, shielded him from that instead of, you know, having him be a part of that. But today he says that it made him who he is, and he's pretty fucking awesome.
Yeah, I think so too. I mean, you probably got a lot of flack from your family and friends for bringing your kids to protests.
Yeah. It was, you know, to the point that I just removed myself from them, you know. Now the kids, they would go, you know, see their grandparents all the time. I actually lived with my mother for a while, you know. But that was when that point when I was like trying to work 2 part-time jobs and go to school and all that stuff. That's when she went to live with my mom. But I got her back. It was hard. My mother didn't want to give her back, you know, but I got her back and I saw Ashley bloom into the woman she is then, because I'd be like, just don't hurt yourself, you know.
Yeah. How did you have conversations with your kids about sexuality and when they came into puberty. Does that make sense? Because yeah. I feel like you were so enlightened. Like, I can imagine it being way different from the conversation I had with my mom, for example. Oh,
yeah. I mean, Micah told me everything. You know, from what I remember, and he might say this isn't true, but, I mean, he never had sex without a condom until he got married.
Wow.
That's one of the things that he took with him. You know, I'm going to protect myself and others. And, you know, so he got the good stuff, you know, even though there was bad stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, was it sort of like a continuous conversation? Like, I feel like when I talk to people about their kids, and if the parent is really enlightened and they're really knowledgeable, they realize that it's not like I'm going to sit down and talk to you once, that it's part
yeah.
of.
Oh, it's ongoing. Yeah. Yeah. My father would say, yeah, those kids are going to give you hell like you gave me. But my kids came to me and felt safe enough to come tell me everything, you know, whereas I didn't have that at all. You know, I kept it inside, but, yeah, it was, he picked up on stuff that, you know, you have conversations, but they pick up on your actions a lot more than they pick up on what you tell them to do. And so Micah picked up, I mean, he's full of empathy and cares about others, and he's an amazing artist, you know, and all my kids are amazing in what they've chosen to do, you know? So they all, in fact, I probably gave Micah, you know, you can do anything you want to do, you little prince. You know, he grew up with that, you yeah. know, and you can tell that in him now. That
he really believes he can do anything.
He can do anything he wants to do, you know. So, you know.
Do you remember ever having a moment where you were like, I can't, like, this is the tough part of parenting. This is really hard to do.
Oh, yeah. Whenever they felt pain, you know, there were things that I couldn't fix for them. Yeah. Definitely.
What were one of those moments?
I don't want my kids to kill me.
Oh.
Let me think.
Or even...
Micah in high school, I go back to Micah because he's more open than my other kids. I don't want to share things about them, but I know he'd be okay with it. You know, just the things of, him seeing his friends around him in high school being bullied and stuff like that. I remember he would, you know, take on those battles for them, you know. So those are the things he would tell me about. I got in a fight today, you know, you're going to have to come get, or you're going to have to come talk to the principal, you know. And everything that he got in trouble with at school were things that I approved of, you know. It was like, you go, you don't let them do that to him, or, you know. So I would go in there with that attitude, like, he hadn't done anything wrong, you know. So, yeah.
Was there ever anything that happened with ACT UP or in your activism that you were like, I really wish I could have shielded my kids from this?
Like I said, when the organizers, Chuck Selber, passed away, you know, that's one of the things, because he was in my children's lives. I mean, he saw them weekly. He would take Ashley to Strawn's for strawberry pie and chocolate milk, you know. And he was, Micah was at his house all the time, you know. It was just those things that... Those are the things that I regret, them seeing the death and the sickness. Yeah.
Yeah. It's got to be tough to mm-hmm. see your kids grapple with really adult
situations like that. Yeah.
Yeah. Do you think that shaped their approach to parenting?
Oh, definitely. Yeah. Because, I mean, look at their children, and their children are just so full of love and empathy for others that they are the parents I wish I could have been more like, you know.
Oh,
they
really?
Are better parents than I ever would have been, you know. So, you know, yeah, totally.
Yeah. All right. I'm going to ask a really personal question.
Okay.
Do you date now?
Not really. I mean, it's not because I don't want to, you know, it's just, I don't know. I mean, I haven't been asked out in a couple of years.
I guess this is the opportunity to say Debbie wants to be asked out on a date.
Because I don't think I'm super picky.
Yeah.
I know I'm kind of cute still.
Yeah. Yeah, you are. Yeah. Well, it's funny because in all of the conversations I've been having with people, everyone talks about their love lives when they were younger.
Yeah, I can see that. Yeah.
But I think a lot about, like, when I'm 60, how old are you?
62?
Okay, 63. I'm like, I want to have a real robust love life yeah. at 63.
Yeah, I mean... It's still all there. I mean, yeah, you know, but maybe I don't go out as much as I used to and stuff like that. The opportunity doesn't present itself as much, you know? And if, I mean, when I see someone I'm attracted to, I'll ask them out. I mean, it doesn't matter how old they are or anything. Yeah. That's never been a deal with me. Yeah.
Well, that might be a good place. Is there more that you want to talk about?
No, that's okay. Pretty much it. I really wanted, thank you for asking me about my activism and stuff, because that's not something that I've had an opportunity to talk about, how I've, my part in that, where the whole picture was about more other people, especially those that have HIV and AIDS. That's who that story was about, and not really about me, you know?
Yeah. Well, I'm so grateful because I think you're such a great role model for allies like me.
Oh, thank you.
Who are like, I want to help people. How do I help? It's not often that you have someone that can be, it feels so weird even calling you this, an elder, because I feel like you're so young.
Thank you.
But, someone that you can look up to and say, like, they've done this, and, that's a path that I should take to stand up for my friends.
Right. Yeah. So. You just follow your heart and find your tribe. That is all it takes.
Yeah. Cool. Well, thank you.
Thank you.